Lowering Expectations.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Maybe Wall Street needs to adjust its expectations. Investors keep getting disappointed by this round of corporate profits, so stocks keep going down. This morning, GE said profits fell 46%. Samsung had its first quarterly loss ever. And Harley-Davidson said it's cutting 12% of its workforce because profits were down 60%. There just aren't many companies delivering good news to shareholders. So far, the Dow is down 176 points to 7946. That's another 2%. The NASDAQ is down 21. The S&P 500 is down 15, also 2%. In Japan today, the Nikkei closed almost 4% lower. European shares fell to a six-year low. The U.S. has been in recession for about a year, but today Britain proclaimed recession for the first time. That's another thing dragging on the markets. We're joined by our European correspondent Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, what are the numbers like over there?
GDP in the last quarter fell 1.5%, much more than many people were forecasting, and double the rate in the previous quarter. Unemployment has hit 1.92 million here. That's well above 6%. And many forecasters are now saying, on the basis of these figures that we have here this morning, that unemployment will hit more than 3 million before this recession is out.
Is there any sense that the British government and the new Obama administration will work together in any way to tackle this dual recession?
British Prime Minister Gordon Brown would like nothing more than to be seen as the wise old man of world economics counseling the newcomer. But he has huge problems here at home. This week he launched a second major bank bailout, and it didn't go down very well. The pound fell to a 25-year low against the US dollar.
And what's the main criticism there?
Well, it's a worry. It's a fear. Investors are fretting that the British government has taken on absolutely huge liabilities by offering to insure the toxic assets of British banks. I mean, just to take one example, the Royal Bank of Scotland, the most vulnerable, the most troubled bank, which is now 70% owned by the British taxpayer, its liabilities are almost double the size of the entire British economy. Now, the British government says we can handle this. There is no problem. We are not Iceland. But there is clearly a lot of worry out there, a lot of unease.
All right, Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Here in California, state lawmakers still haven't decided how to make up a $40 billion budget shortfall. So this week, Moody's threatened to downgrade California's credit rating to the lowest of any state. Now, who would be worried about that? Here's Rico Galliano.
Well, let's start with Californians. Tom Dreslar is spokesman for the state treasurer.
We get downgraded, the economic harm will fall on taxpayers because the state will have to pay more to issue bonds.
And additional tax money would go to paying that debt instead of, for instance, health care. But what if you don't live in California? Marilyn Cohen of Envision Capital Management says you should still care about those downgraded bonds.
Since California is the largest issuer of tax-free bonds, probably anybody who is in the bond market has at one time or another owned a California general obligation bond.
That could include your bond fund or money market. Now, it may sound like the makings for another financial earthquake, but Cohen says investors and fund managers are probably steeled for the shock.
I think right now the overall market has baked into the market that they're going to be downgraded. I mean, it has been very well telegraphed about the situation for California.
And of course, Golden State lawmakers might put together a budget plan and avoid a credit downgrade altogether. Seriously, it could happen. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Friday, January 23rd on Marketplace.org. Earlier, I mentioned GE reported a 46% drop in profits. GE's been around for 117 years, and 2008 was one of its worst. A lot of people own GE stock, so they probably want to know, is this just about the recession, or is there something else wrong? Alisa Roth looked into that.
General Electric's stock is worth 62% less than it was a year ago. In December, GE said it wouldn't forecast quarterly results anymore, and it's not making any predictions about next year either. Richard Sparks is an equities analyst with Schaefer's Investment Research. He says part of GE's problem is its image. It's long been thought of as an industrial stock.
What we're seeing now, though, over recent years, is that General Electric has kind of transformed itself, and a large part of its business now is actually in the financial area.
Which, of course, means it's been hit along with the rest of the financial companies. Sparks says one lousy earnings report shouldn't matter too much, since most companies are doing badly right now.
Expectations across the board for this quarter's earnings are very subdued.
Still, there's talk that GE's poor performance of late could force it to lose its AAA credit rating. And Sparks says that could put a real mark on its reputation. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
There's a possible mega merger in the pharmaceutical industry. The word this morning is that the world's largest drug company, Pfizer, is in talks to buy its competitor, Wyeth. It could be a $60 billion deal. That would be huge in any economy, but in a recession, it looks even bigger. Ashley Milne-Tite tells us more about it.
Pfizer is probably best known for its cholesterol drug Lipitor. It brings in a quarter of the company's revenue. But sales are likely to dwindle when generic versions of Lipitor hit the market in a couple of years. IHS Global Insight healthcare analyst Gustav Ando.
You need to fill out your pipeline if you have a big drug that's going off patent, and Pfizer has the biggest of them all.
Lipitor's patent runs out in 2011, so the scramble is on for another blockbuster. That's why Pfizer is sizing up its rival, Wyeth.
It has some good, strong drugs and new drugs that are on the market in those kind of areas that Pfizer wants to move into, which is oncology and vaccines.
Like the kids' vaccine Prevnar, which had $2.4 billion in sales in 2007. Ando says it's very difficult to make a generic version of a vaccine like Prevnar, so that makes its manufacturer, Wyeth, all the more appealing. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
President Obama and top congressional leaders will meet today to talk more about the stimulus package. There are already rifts developing between Democrats and Republicans over what's in it. Hardly surprising. But does GOP support really even matter that much in this case? Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
House Republicans want President Obama to stick with tax cuts he included in his stimulus proposal. Congressional Democrats toned them down. Republicans won't be more specific before the meeting, but Dave Camp, the ranking Republican on the House Ways and Means Committee, says the Democrats' stimulus plans are wasteful.
The American people know we cannot spend our way to prosperity.
President Obama probably doesn't need GOP help in the House, but he will need a handful of supportive Republicans in the Senate to stave off a filibuster. James Thurber teaches political science at American University. He says the terrible economy will prompt Republicans to cooperate.
When there's a clearly perceived crisis, one can come to a solution more quickly. And I think the Republicans realize that they have to be responsible and do that and not just say no.
Otherwise, they could be blamed for a situation that appears to be getting worse every day. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Banks still aren't making loans available on a widespread basis. The question is why? Four words, the capital adequacy requirement. I think it's time for another Marketplace decoder. And I have just the guy to explain this, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
As a business reporter, I've got a bit of an edge. My dad, Joe Gretsch, works as a loan officer at Royal Bank America, a regional bank near Philadelphia. So whenever I come across an arcane financial term, he's my go-to guy. Hey, Dad, it's Dan. Do you have a sec? I just had a quick favor to ask.
Sure.
Can you tell me what a capital adequacy requirement is?
Well, I'll try. That basically is a minimum amount of capital that a bank must have in order to keep doing business or lending money.
It's a kind of cushion to protect investors if things go sour.
Let's say that you are a bank and that you have $100 million in assets. And by assets, I mean everything that the bank owns, buildings, investments, cash, etc. So the capital adequacy requirement for that bank would be 10% of the $100 million or $10 million.
In other words, the value of the bank's assets would be 10% more than the value of its liabilities, such as issued stock and borrowed money. It's not always 10%. The thickness of the cushion is determined by international agreement and enforced by federal regulators. The riskier the assets, the higher the percentage.
Now, let's say that the bank makes lots of bad loans and bad investments. So as the losses pile up, the bank's capital might dip below that $10 million floor. Does that help you?
Well, yeah, but what happens next?
Well, basically the bank stops lending.
He says that explains why many banks are getting billions in federal bailout money but aren't lending it out.
They are using that federal money to bulk up their capital reserves and get them back above that minimum.
My dad's an opinionated guy. He couldn't help but slip in his 2 cents.
I have to say as a banker that it's a good thing that TARP money is out there because it has stabilized a lot of banks. It really has.
Thanks, Dad. Any chance you could help stabilize me with a little capital infusion? I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.